Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
I'm an Englishman. I'm from Bermondsey, southeast London. My father was called George. He was also from Bermondsey. His father, another Bermondsey man, was called George too. And his father, my great-grandfather, is from the same place. He was called Edward. These three generations of my family were in the fish trade. I'm the first member of my family not to work at the market in Billingsgate. My great-grandfather had 11 brothers and sisters. They all married, except one. They had 43 children. Of these, 37 married. And between them, they had a further 159 children. One of those was my father. I don't know exactly how many of his generation married or exactly how many children they produced. I've so far tracked over 200 of them. Many still live in Bermondsey. Some are still in the fish trade. There are 7 called George and 5 called Victoria. I stand here in front of you as a representative of all of them. And I ask in their name the great question put by our patron, Mr. Powell. What do they know of England who only England know? Or what can my family who come from England, who lived in England, who know only England, say of this, our country? Mr. Powell once spoke of the destruction of ancient Athens and the miraculous survival in the blackened ruins of that city of the sacred olive tree, the symbol of Greece, their country. And he also spoke of us, the English, at the heart of a vanished empire, seeming to find within ourselves, like one of our own oak trees, the sap rising from our ancient roots. And he said, perhaps after all, we who have inhabited this island fortress for an unbroken 1,000 years, brought up, as he said, within the sound of English birdsong, under the English oak, in the English meadow, beneath the red cross of St. George, it is us who know most of England. And I appreciated him for saying that, because it was as if he spoke for my family, who understand well their own country.
to understand even better their own capital, London Town, as we used to call her. As we strolled in her parks, as we marveled at her palaces, as we did business in the city, went west for a dance, took a boat on the river. The pale ale and eel pie of old London. The London of my family for as many generations as I know. The London that within 15 years would be less than 50% white. London where in 15 years a white person will be in the minority. Am I racist? No. Do I have anything against people of other races? No. Would I prevent them from coming into my home? No. So what then is my gripe? My gripe. And I speak on behalf of 7 men called George and 5 women called Victoria. My gripe is quite simple. My gripe is that we were never asked. My gripe is that we were told, not asked. And every day we are told again and again how we are to be and how our country is to be. We're told by them, and we know who they are. They're English too. They're the class that has always set themselves apart. They're the class that has always taken whatever they wanted for themselves. And now they are the class that is giving England away. They have never asked us. And they never will. Do we allow them to sell our heritage? Or is it time for us to speak? To speak. To refuse them the right. To give away our holy, our bountiful, our only England that has nurtured us naked, grown us as the oak. Is it time for us that England know to come yet again and defend our country? With our fire, our fists! Is it time for our sons to rise again? I say yes. I say yes. I say yes!
I say yes. We all say yes. A good evening and welcome to the English Defence League radio show, broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. The English Defence League radio show, the truth and the voice of the EDL. Tonight, we have our very own Mr. Dave Hagedorn-Milner will be joining me tonight, my panellist and my wingman. As we do this show this evening, and as you all know, the show tonight is called the English Defence League Radio Show, Countdown to Battle for Britain. Okay, welcome to the English Defence League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Spider-Mitchell, that's me, and my wingman this evening is Dave Hagedorn-Milner. Tonight we'll be discussing the total treacherous betrayal by the politicians over Brexit. Our democracy lies in shreds with the worst constitutional crisis we have ever known. But this is not over. On the 29th of March at 11 p.m. sharp, we leave the EU sham with or without politicians say. And on that day, the real battle for Britain begins. We are a proud people and tolerant, but Brexiteers and patriots at home and across the globe, we won't go quietly into the good night. This is just the beginning. Brothers and sisters, our children and their children's future is at stake. We will not let them down. We promise. Put soldiers, angels, supporters of the cause, and global patriots, this is your platform and voice. Please call in. This is the year of the patriots. No surrender ever. With that, I'd like to pass it to my dear friend and colleague, Dave Agador Milner. Good evening, my dear friend.
Good evening, Jeff. Good evening to everybody in the UK. Good afternoon to everybody in the United States. And hello to everyone else around the world and off Earth. Yes, it's going to be a big, big show. We've got big, big issues to discuss. It's a big, big historical time. Jeff, when I was advertising the program, put out there that 79 years ago, the battle for Britain began in 1940 when the Blitz started. All right. And oddly enough, the enemy at that point was coming from Europe. And it just struck me last night that, yes, when I saw your title for the show, that all just came together. 79 years later, and now this generation of people in the UK are going to have to fight the battle for Britain again. And, Jeff, there is going to be a demonstration, which we will talk about, but you had a statement you wanted to read out, man. And,
I've got to say, what we did right at the beginning, Dave, with that young man speaking, you know, I'm an Englishman, very, very much is very similar to the theme that I'm going to share with our great listeners out there. But this is from my heart, from me, to all of you patriots out, all you foot soldiers, all you angels, all you Brexiteers, this is for you. And anyway, I will start it. It's always been said that democracy and freedom was hard fought, and so many lives died protecting those freedoms as we stand at this time with people marching to London on the march on the 29th for our Liberation Day. There are those who despise the things our nation has fought so hard to keep. This country and nation free from tyranny and betrayal. If politicians think they can steal the Brexit away from 17.5 million people, they have surely underestimated the will of the people. And as history shows, you go against the will of the people, and you do at your peril. That's how serious this time in history. Long live Brexit. Out means out. With that, let me pass it back to you, Dave. What do you think, mate?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's fantastic, Jeff. You know, that's the thing. The people voted out, you know, coming on close to 3 years ago now. The people voted out.
Yeah.
I heard part of Theresa May's last speech about, oh, it's the fault of Parliament that we couldn't get out with a deal. You didn't want to get out with a deal. That wasn't on the ballot. I've seen the ballot. People, you know, my American brothers and sisters, I've seen the ballot that they voted on. It wasn't leave or remain or leave with a deal. It was leave or remain. It was very simple. All right, and it
was
has
so
less
easy
to do with
anybody to comprehend, wasn't it, Dave? Anybody.
It was, yeah,
go
exactly.
Ahead. Sorry,
it was less to do. And excuse me, Theresa May was like, oh well, we had to decide on the procedures. Okay, all right, you did. but you played around for almost 3 years. Could have been decided in less than a year. It could have been decided in less than a year if it wasn't for the fact that Theresa May was a Ramoner. She wanted to stay in Europe. And that is where all of this has come from. It's come from her desire to create some kind of weaselly Brexit in name only, because she didn't like the way the people voted, and the lefties didn't like the way the people voted. But you know, that's tough. So you know, as an American, as someone who looks on the UK as you know, one of the mother countries of the United States. And, you know, I say that the will of the people must be followed. And if it isn't, well, then the politicians have to pay the price by losing their jobs. And,
well, yeah,
Jeff, you know, I just want to say that you know, I'm 100% behind the people of the United Kingdom. And you know what, man, that was a great statement that you put out there. One of the other things that you did, Jeff, guys, Jeff is a great is turning into a great news hound. You know,
I'm always following it, Dave, wherever the news is, man.
Yeah, in the great tradition of people like Jan Rennie. Yeah.
Jan, brilliant.
Yeah. Now here's something, guys. I'm going to give this, Jeff. I'm going to give this to you for the chat. You found this. And I'm not going to read a lot of it because we've got tons of stuff to go through tonight, guys. I'm not going to read a lot of this. But to give you some background before I get into it, all right? We came to find out that rich celebrities were going to pay for this, you know, supposedly massive pro-Remain march, this massive anti-Brexit march. And there were going to be a million people there. Yeah. And, you know, from the picture I can see here, Jeff, it looks like there were a million signs there, but not so much a million people. And this here comes from the politics section of the Daily Telegraph. All right. And
absolutely. And the integrity of the Telegraph goes without saying, Dave. If there's one paper you know will tell you the truth, it is the Daily Telegraph, and then that's one paper you can rely on, Dave, because it's integrity with them, you see. So please carry on, Dave, my dear friend.
Well, it basically says that the march was way smaller than originally than they wanted it to be. You know, we want a million people in this, and it turned out to be a big bust. Okay, it turned out to be a giant bust because that's the way it is with those people. You know, it always turns out that way. And Jeff, you know, that was a nice bit of news gathering there. You know, and yeah, you know, that was an official estimate too. And usually, you know how it is with these official estimates. They favor the lefties, but this time it didn't. So, Jeff, good on you there. You had another one.
It's just common sense and common decency to put the right statistics. And you know, Sky News was calling it a million people, surging people. And then we see the truth, because as we know, the BBC, Sky News, ITV, all those are state run. That's the way they want the narrative to be. And of course, you've all seen this so-called revoke Article 50. You know, they say there's 3 to 4 to 5 million. Unfortunately, we do know, because a lot of people have been checking this out, that these names that they're putting, they're coming from all over the world. What's going on there, Dave? This is wrong.
Unbelievable.
But you know what, Dave? Even they get 2, 3, 4 million, whatever they want, and they want the politicians to talk about it, let them talk. It's not 17.5 million people, you know, and still counting. You know, if we want to do a referendum on the ones that we've, the people we've got already, it's easy just to say, please join us. You know, 17.5 million people and counting, Dave.
Exactly.
But we've got a bit of integrity. We don't do that. We let the numbers talk for themselves, don't we, Dave?
We know it's all lies, the lefty, the pathetic remoters,
and the betrayal. But as I say, there are the real people out there. And as I say, kudos to the Telegraph for telling the truth. That's really, really good to see, isn't it, David? Journalism is dead today. But we can say that one group out there, the Telegraph, has been operating for years. If you want, you know, the truth about anything in detail, anything, you go to the Telegraph, don't you, Dave? You know, it's always been that paper. But I've got to give you kudos, you know, Dave. You know, you do so yourself, pal, don't you? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I don't trust any of them, but you know, Jeff, there's another one that you found, and this is more along the lines of what the sentiment of the people really is. And this one here, okay, this is by Ross Ibbotson, and I gave this to you in your Skype, Jeff, for the Mail Online. Okay, this was updated on the 22nd, all right, a couple of days ago. All right, furious Brexiteers cause motorway chaos across the UK as they organize a lorry go slow at rush hour. That's in the slides, by the way. After leaving date is postponed and it's revealed. Now get this, guys. MPs could be allowed a vote on a second referendum. They could be allowed to vote on the second referendum or canceling the exit, okay? That is the big betrayal right there, guys. That's what Jeff was talking about when he was, and what we talked about the last time we had a show about betrayal and stuff like that. They've actually got, you know, the brass bound gall to say, oh, well, we're going to vote on whether or not we're going to exit Europe. Just us in Parliament. Yeah, really, dude? You gonna do that? Anyway, I'm gonna go ahead, Jeff, and read the bullet points here. The Brexit Direct Action Group said they had organized multiple haulers to go slow. Next one, cars could be seen beeping their horns. Now, how you can see somebody beeping their horn? I don't know. And swerving through the slowdowns. The next one. Police rushed to intervene in Devon and said lead drivers would be prosecuted. Try prosecuting all of them. Give that a shot. I'll finish reading the bullet points and then I'll look at. Okay. The next one. Protesters say the government has failed to deliver Brexit and betrayed them. There you are, Jeff. Next one. Second pictures of protests on the roads tonight. Send some pictures to us. Yeah. You know what, Jeff? That right there. I just want to stop and say for a second. Right. That's real good. Police, do go ahead and arrest all the truck drivers. Guess what that's going to do to food and medical deliveries and equipment deliveries and everything else in the UK. You want to bring the country to a complete halt instead of just a slowdown? Yeah, go ahead and arrest the truck drivers, you idiots.
Well, that's what's going to happen. They don't seem to understand that we're furious. People are furious, the truck drivers, everybody, people just like myself, just ordinary people. The betrayal is just too big that we can't just sit by and be rolled over, Dave. I mean, I said this was going to happen, didn't I? Dave, I said to you a while ago, you'll see the whole country shut down with where it's going. Because people are not going to, you go against democracy, is what I said. You know, you go against the will of the people, then it's, you know, that is bad for politicians. It's bad for our country. And it makes us look a laughing stock. Well, not us, the people. So I think anybody in the world will know.
Not the people, no.
The real true Brexiteers, the people who fight the wars, who go out there and fight wars and do that, we're the real people. And you go against the real people. My goodness me. You've got to be pretty brave or just plain bloody stupid, Dave, to go against the constitutional vote.
Exactly. Madness, and it blows my mind, really, that these people. Okay, this again is thinking from a citified lefty standpoint of people who don't know how anything works. In countries all over the world, okay, yeah, sure, you've got ports, you know, you've got rail lines, okay, you can even overnight packages and whatnot with aircraft, but you have to have the trucks on the road making those local deliveries, and they deliver locally to everywhere. It's like I said, they deliver everything, food. Medicine, that's a big one right there, is medicine. People are would find it hard to keep their factories running because they deliver raw materials. They deliver sub-assembled components to factories for them to put together. Okay?
Yeah.
Truck drivers really are the lifeline of the modern world. And if these people want to try and put all the truck drivers in jail, they are going to have a massive problem, because what's going to happen? Are the cops going to drive the trucks? I wouldn't want to be on the road with that.
Well, have they got enough police to drive the trucks? That's what I say.
Exactly.
not only that, I mean, you talk about the trucks, you know, there's also blockading of the docks. I mean, they really underestimated the people, because I'll tell you what, plans are underway. This country hasn't seen nothing yet. I do feel sorry for people like myself. Maybe my medication is going to be dropped because I can't get them. But you know what? If it's for the country and it's for the people, and then it's the sacrifice that we have to pay. When you've got a government that's sort of just betraying us all, then you've got to do something very serious. And a lot of people got to realise that this is the worst constitutional crisis we've known. And it hurts us all. We feel it. And we feel... The country's become, our politicians have created a laughing stock across the world. And now that's embarrassing. And also, it's very annoying to just the normal people like myself, Dave, you know. As I say, plans are still, they're all going, Dave. What's going on is just the tip of the iceberg, buddy.
Oh, sure.
It's just the beginning.
Absolutely.
And there's going to be
a lot more
before the 29th. And also, just to inform our listeners, there's quite a possibility that we might see this big source out, and we could see, within a couple of days or so, a new Prime Minister. Shiny new politician.
Yeah.
Oh,
Jeff, we'll see about that, man. I mean, I've been looking, obviously today, I've been looking at a lot of news stories, not only in preparation for this show, but in preparation for my own. And I did come across that. It looks like Breitbart is reporting that it looks like Theresa May will survive what looks like, you know, trying to replace her. For one reason, and that is that they can't decide who to replace her with. Of course, you know, you and I have our favorite. but, you know, that's the thing. They can't quite decide, who is going to replace Theresa May. but it's really getting intense right now, Jeff.
Well, I think we need Kermit in charge because he could do a far better job than me. Jeremy Corbyn! Oh, dear. Just to let you know, Dave, I don't want to, you know, people your thoughts, but just to let you know, we've got our dear friend, Smokey. Smokey's joining us this evening. And he's just put a couple of things. Just had a problem. Because if I put a link in, then I've got to close the chat and then open it up because it's in a different browser, Smokey. So, and he said it would be as unsafe as us all as the illegals on the road here in Texas. Jeremy Corbyn to the rescue. I tell you what, we're never going to see Jeremy Corbyn.
That would be like AOC to the rescue.
Walls to 10 down the street. But he'd be frog marched away by the military. Everybody hates him. No one likes him.
Yeah. I mean, he is such an abrasive. Well, aside from the fact that he's a really good friend of IRA. He's a really good friend of IRA terrorists and jihadis and people like that. Hamas. There you go.
Well,
yeah.
Dave, you know, he's horrible. Yeah. He's horrible.
I mean,
Smokey, but you know Jeremy Corbyn, I think I've mentioned to you before, Dave, you know Karl Marx, put Karl Marx and a picture of Jeremy Corbyn side by side, I'll tell you what, you couldn't really tell the difference, Dave. They look so much alike, apart from he looks like a tramp, you know what I mean?
You mean Corbyn. I mean, at least Karl Marx dressed up a little bit. You know, I mean, you gotta say that.
well done.
My God, man. Yeah, I mean, holy crap, man. It's terrible. Okay. you know, that's the thing, man. This whole deal. If Jeremy Corbyn can't even control his own party. For the Americans,
we mustn't forget that Jeremy Corbyn is an anti-Semitic. Now, that is something
that he's not
dismissed. He is anti-Semitic,
and Jeff, let me contrast that real quick, man. Remember a couple of shows ago, you know, we did that story on that Tory gentleman that came out and said and retweeted that thing about Tommy Robinson being a patriot, and his own party kicked him out. You contrast that a bit of bravery, that profile and courage, with the weaseliness of the Labour Party that is keeping Corbyn on despite the fact that he's a terrorist sympathizer, despite the fact that he's an anti-Semite. And then at the same time, they try to accuse the right of anti-Semitism. That is a complete crock. Just a complete crock. And that's going to be the thing. You know, but I want to say,
that
Jeff,
when they say it's embedded in the party, anti-Semitic, there's a word, institutionalized anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. So
I'd say
it's
that's
been
right.
there for a long time, Dave, except it was shown it's really ugly. And I worry about anti-Semitism because we don't want to see what we saw, all them years ago, Dave.
No, certainly not.
The death of so many innocent people in the horrible chambers, etc., and people like him encourage it. He's probably a denier as well. He denies.
Oh, I'm sure he denies the Holocaust.
May he rot in hell, because there's a nice warm place for people like him, isn't there, Dave? You know what I mean?
But he disgusts me.
He's probably the worst. I mean, I've seen a few dodgy Labour people before, they're second in commands, wherever they might be. If you see me say Diane Abbott, Diane Abbott, she can't even count. Now, talk about racism. She hates white people, Dave.
She's your version of Jeremiah Wright is what she is. Americans will get that. From a UK brothers and sisters, that's the preacher whose church Obama attended for years. The same guy that said "God damn America." I'm just familiarizing.
Let you know, Dave. We've got another gentleman that's joined us this evening. I've seen for a little while, but he's a good friend of ours. Moving forward.
Hey, moving. What up, man?
Yeah, moving forward. He's moving. Yay,
hope
moving.
Hope you're well, brother. Hope you're well. Yeah. So, it's just huge stuff that's going on. And one of the things that I thought about before the show, Jeff, was, the similarity of what's going on, between the United Kingdom and the United States right now. I mean, there's a good reason why guys who listen to the Unpleasant Blind Guy and go, well, Dave, you talk a lot about the UK. That's because this evil has migrated. I've been warning you guys for years that it was going to migrate over to the States. And it has. It's here. It's in our face right now. All right?
Yeah.
I warned you guys about this. And that's why I talk about the UK so much.
Tommy Robinson was put in prison for trying to warn the United States what was happening.
Exactly.
Tommy Robinson come over because he couldn't come over to the country, come under a friend's passport, which is wrong. But he knew that he could get in trouble and probably be in prison for it. And he was.
Yeah.
But because of the severity and how concerned he was for, these good people, the good friends in the United States, he wanted to come across and to speak about the situation, what's going to happen. And he was arrested and put in prison for it, Dave.
And that's the situation that exists in the UK now, guys. And that's why I do so much, with and about the UK, guys, Limbaugh and Levin and all those guys over in the United States are doing a great job of talking to you guys about the topical stuff that's going on. I try to do a little bit more about what's coming up so that you can be armed and stuff like that. And that's why I so much appreciate Jeff and Jan and people like that, because they help with us. Jeff, I want to do something here. This is a little bit off of what we planned to do, but I want to do this here. We had our friend Mike call in last show, and he was trying to Mike's a good man, but he does tend to listen a little bit too much to the fake stream media, and we had to
It's sad, sometimes it's the only news they come across. Some of them don't dig too deep into the true news, myself and you, Dave, many others have learned to do, to don't take any notice what the mainstream are telling you, because it's all lies. But go ahead,
exactly.
Please,
now, Jeff, he tried to equate this New Zealand attack with the Islamic terrorist attacks that have been going on for years and years and years. And, we Jeff and I both tried to set him straight. But it made me think of an old show. Well, I thought I had done an entire show on this. It made me think of an old, turns out to be conservative bite that I used to do. Guys, I used to do these about five-minute things called conservative bites, okay? And I did this one. That I want to play, Jeff. I did this one on the 23rd of January in 2016. All right.
Wow.
That's about 5 minutes and 49 seconds long, so it's just under 6 minutes. Now, if you don't mind, I'll play it. But I want to say first, okay, to any of the fake stream media dweebs out there that listen to the show, because we know some of you do.
They spin things that we say on here as well.
That's why I want to say Yeah, that's why I want to say what I want to say before I play this, okay? What you're about to hear does not come from the EDL. This comes from me. This comes from the Unpleasant Blind Guy. This is my opinion only, okay? But there are also some facts. So, Jeff, if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and play this. Because
you
I think people need to be reminded of this again. Okay, guys, here we go. This is the thing that I did, again, in January of 2016.
Time for an Unpleasant Blind Guy Conservative Bite. Each time civilized people are attacked by the followers of Muhammad, politicians, pundits, and others rush to the news outlets to tell us all that it's not all Muslims, that the support among the followers of Islam for terrorism only amounts to about 10% of those who practice the ideology of Islam. This claim is always made, and it's worth checking. A good way to do that would be to compare the reaction of Mohammedans to the November 2015 jihadi attacks in Paris and their reaction to the Charlie Hebdo cartoons. After the Paris attacks, six Muslim students at a technical institute in Varese, Italy, walked out of their classroom during the minute of silence the school held in homage to those who died in the Paris attacks. Many might dismiss this as a very small number. But in France, where the attacks took place,
some French newspapers reported that on Thursday, the minute of silence that was called by the president in a day of national mourning, teachers reported to the press that some of their Muslim students refused to accept or refused to observe that moment of silence. Therefore, there is still a big problem in society, by no means the majority.
But is it only a small minority? In Chechnya, 800,000 Muslims protested the Muhammad cartoons, with similar events held in Iran and elsewhere. In Pakistan alone, the number reached 10,000 protesting the Charlie Hebdo cartoons. In Australia, 1,000 Muslims rallied against the Charlie Hebdo cartoons. In Kyrgyzstan, 1,000 Muslims rallied, saying, "I am not Charlie, I love my prophet." Now let's contrast those numbers. In 2005, a group called the Free Muslims Coalition held a Free Muslims March Against Terror that drew about 25 people. In July of 2015, a rally in Ireland against the Islamic State got about 50 people. In June of 2013, at a progressive Muslim rally in Toronto, only about 25 people showed up. Now you might be saying, well, Dave, these are countries where followers of Muhammad who want to protest acts of terror might be afraid for their safety in their communities. All right, let's try a country where people do have gun rights. In August of 2013, there were only about 25 people at a rally against misperceptions that Islam was violent. That was held in Boston. Some still might be saying, well, that was a city in the northeastern United States. We know they're kind of strict on gun rights. Okay. In October 2014, a Houston, Texas rally against the Islamic State got 10 people. People, it's accepted wisdom that actions speak louder than words. In France, which has a population of about 5 million Muslims, only about 30 attended the rally against the Paris jihad attacks. If it is only about 10% of the followers of Islam who support terror, why will not the other 90% even show up for rallies against Islamic terror? If, as the Council on American-Islamic Relations says, these attacks are a distortion of Islam, then that means that they are an insult to Islam. That means that they are an insult to the Prophet Muhammad. So why are our streets not clogged with Muslim protesters demanding action from their governments to help free their countries from terror? Knowing the numbers, we can only come to one conclusion. It is because instead of only about 10% of Islamists supporting terror, only about 10% or less oppose terror. If this were not the case, the numbers at the anti-terror rallies would be massive. people the cause of Islamic terror is not the fact that other countries are in the Middle East drilling oil, they were invited in. It's not the fact that Muslims feel marginalized in civilized countries. It's because Islam inspires terror. The numbers show it. The actions of the followers of Muhammad prove it. People, while there is still time to save civilization, we must act in a non-violent way to remove the followers of Islam from all positions where they could do non-Muslims harm. They must assimilate to their host countries, or they must find somewhere else to live. Like all true Americans, I have a natural revulsion towards singling out a group of people for different treatment. But as the numbers show, most Islamists support singling out everyone else for different treatment, and that treatment is not good. Civilization can save itself if we will just act. This has been an Unpleasant Blind Guy Conservative Fight.
You know, Dave, and that was back in 2016, but
yeah.
It seems like the same story from then is still the same story today, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've noticed the massacre, the massacres of Nigerian Christians.
Yeah.
Something I did want to speak about is, where is the outrage, Dave? Where's the outrage? I think it's over 550, I think it was 400, I think it's 400 was killed at students in one of the universities in Nigeria.
Yeah, the numbers keep going up and up, Jeff.
Certain other, that they was killed, I'm not sure the number, but they was killed, they was shot or whatever they was done, and they, the jihadis, set about the remains with chainsaws and beheaded them all.
Right.
Where's the outrage, Dave? Why are we seeing the mainstream media going manic over these people who's doing these absolutely heinous acts? Or is it just that it doesn't quite fit their narrative?
You got
it,
Jeff.
It's upsetting. This Christians dying as we're probably talking, Dave. People in their homes, churches being burned, people being burned alive in their homes. But do we hear the outcry? What is the world gone mad, Dave? Is it really?
Jeff, you know what, man? You're right, and this is something that we need to keep on talking about, because the fake stream media won't talk about it. They're out there defending themselves. The fake stream media is one of the other things that I saw in passing on Breitbart was this story of the head of the BBC, you know, moaning and complaining, the term mainstream media has been turned into a slur, and I can remember when it was better, but now reporters are being insulted and things because they're just out there reporting. No, that's not what's going on. The reporters are being insulted and whatnot because they're not reporting. They're propagandizing. The BBC is no better than Pravda, you know, Pravda on television.
The obvious answer is that they can't report the true statistics, the true facts, simply because their editors tell them otherwise. That anything else is any reports they do and it's not quite fits the narrative has been.
Mm-hmm.
They say, go back and rewrite it. It's supposed to be written in our politically correct way. That's the problem.
How often has that been said, Jeff?
They probably wouldn't do that. But unfortunately, it's their jobs and, they go along. We're just following orders.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what a lot of them say. And that's why that lady who we played this audio for, I'm not going to play it now, but who we played this audio from, you know, some time ago, talking about Tommy Robinson,
who used to work for the BBC, she had this idealistic view of the BBC and of the press, and she was working for them, and that is pretty much what they told her. Now, Jeff, believe it or not, the show's half over. If you'd like to call back in,
we've got a guest joined us as well. So we've got. Let's just check to make sure no one else has joined us while we've been talking.
Hello, guest.
You've got a guest, and of course our moving forward, who's absolutely an awesome gentleman, and Smokey. Look, Dave, we did pick Smokey. Yeah, you know, he's one of the first in the chat room. I didn't pass you one of our special gold stars for that man.
Oh,
you know
man.
What I mean?
Yeah, you know what?
I'll give moving one as well, could you?
Yeah. No worries. Let me just polish one off. Okay, here we go, Smokey. You know,
nice
gold star for you, brother. Yeah, and Smokey will be having his program Time to Wind Down tonight at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Spreaker.com. I want to say that now, Jeff. If you want to call back in, I want to play a tune here for all of those Christians who have been lost, because it seems like the mainstream media just doesn't give a damn about them.
It's just like, Dave, before you do, I just want to say this. It's like they're trying to destroy Christianity. It feels that way. It's the world so evil that they just want to get rid of Christianity totally. It's just my feeling, Dave, and it's...
who they're working for,
I don't
Jeff.
Know where
shows.
We go from what they're trying to do, because... you know, and the bravery, the courageousness of these people that is dying, hoping their Lord will, you know, make sure that their suffering doesn't last long. It's hard to put yourself in the place of some of these poor Nigerians and the Philippines. There was a term, I think it was Smokey, I just put a link into the Philippines, the Filipinos who were slaughtered, going back a little while ago. We must think about the Christians and pray for them. Mustn't we, Dave? I mean, it's a genocide, isn't it, Dave? I'm not being
it
over.
Is. It is. No,
yeah,
it's a big word, isn't it?
Genocide means this massive, you know?
It is.
But Dave, please, could you continue, mate? Hmm. And I'll call back in. Cheers, pal.
Okay. Yeah, now Jeff is going to call back in. And as he does, you know, I'm going to go ahead and play this tune for the Christians that have been lost in these massacres that the fake stream media just doesn't seem to give a damn about. And to all the Christians in the world who think that once in a while you get an insult from some non-Christian, from some lefty or something like that, and you think you're living the life of Daniel. No, you're not. These people are. They're having their villages destroyed, their families wiped out, their churches burned down. We need to remember them, and we need to pray for them and their families, and we need to fight for them. Please stay tuned for the second half of the English Defense League radio show. This will be about just over 3 minutes.
I say, Dave, that I think that just summed it up. The voice, absolutely, a wonderful tune. I never get tired of hearing that. But that goes out as a prayer from us all of the
yeah.
absolute terrible things that's going on, especially in Nigeria. Smoke did mention, Dave, I mean, he did mention about in the Philippines, and he said to me, how many were killed in Africa in the last few weeks? Has to be over 200
yeah.
by now in
yeah.
Nigeria
yeah,
alone.
It's over
500. There was about 420 or something other killed in one day, and these were all students, Dave. These were all young people
well,
just doing the studies, and this group of people, what you call them, barbarians, come along and totally kill them all, as many as they possibly could.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, there was a lot that got away, thank the Lord, that he offered them some protection to help them, because it was terrible. But you know, Smokey, you say that, but we'll talk about the rest of the world. As you know, the persecution and the murder of Christians it goes right away across the globe, my dear friend. And this is it. It seems like we're all under the cosh because we're Christians. And of course, our country, look what's going on in the UK. Our churches have been turned into mosques.
Right.
It's like they're trying to put the end of Christianity. We're a Christian nation. Why? We I don't think we're going to have to put up with this for much longer. I really don't believe it. You know, there's a lot of us. You know, I'm not a Bible basher, nothing like that, nor most of us, but there's something that's good about having a Christian upbringing, isn't there? There's something about your faith. And I believe in everybody for their own faith, whatever, but please don't interfere and try to create havoc amongst the other people who are just going about their lives. But it's me, just me, Dave. Speaking, you know, personal feeling about it. I know people, there's different faiths and this, that, and the other, Dave. I appreciate every faith out there, you know.
We don't see the Sikhs out there, Jeff, doing this stuff, or Jewish people, or anybody like that. No, you know, it's got to stop, man. And that's... We also have to recognize that it's time for people to defend themselves. And I don't mean, you know, go out there and aggressively attack other people, but people have to be able to defend themselves. And what is going on now in New Zealand is exactly the wrong thing. This is going to be in my next show, by the way, that I'm going to have starting on the 30th. But New Zealand is doing exactly the wrong thing. They're already restricting more of the gun rights, and that's exactly the wrong thing to do. This horrible prime minister they've got down there, you know, had women wearing hefty bags on Friday and allowed this Islamic prayer on. On the national New Zealand television to go on saying, you know, Allah is the only God, blah blah blah, what garbage!
Yeah,
that's exactly the wrong thing to do.
At the same time, that prayer does, Dave. That's what's this is supposed to be a Christian nation.
It is.
They're blaspheming things right across New Zealand. You know, broadcast across New Zealand. They just don't understand that prayer. We do, Dave, don't we? We know it well. We know exactly what they're telling. Yeah, they hate us. We are the
Kufar.
We are the infidels. And I just heard another story today, Dave. Another one of the converts was captured and he wants to go over to New Zealand, but they haven't got an ambassador or anybody over in Syria. Oh, dear. Where did he come from, Dave?
Let me guess.
Who that mosque that horrible, yep, nasty person shot up? Another one.
Exactly.
And there was another two that was killed in 2014. Just a bit of a... Dave, you might not have heard, but they asked to hand the guns in. Well, there's been a bit of a survey of how many guns have been handed in. Well, there's 1,500,000 people in New Zealand. At this moment in time, 37 guns was handed over. We're not sure what happened.
Good. Good. Because everybody knows, Jeff. Yeah, everybody knows, Jeff, what happened when Australia had their gun ban. The gun crimes went right through the roof, man. You know, and it happened in the UK when you guys banned the private ownership of handguns. Okay? Again, gun crime went up like a rocket. It happens every time that goes on. And what do the lefties... And what do the lefties and other soft-headed people do? They would have been
really
idiots.
I think she's ruined the day, what she did, because she's having death threats, Dave. Oh, dear, some people are really upset with what she's done. She's embarrassed the New Zealand people. They're a proud people. Well, it's not me and you, Dave, proud people.
Well, she's trying to do it full on.
If you talk about extremism, what happened? Yes, what happened was it was extremism at the worst.
It was a horrible
state. But what she's doing, she's going to cause a lot of problems because there's a lot of people in New Zealand that aren't going to stand by, and we know that. I mean, I just felt that we was the next thing they'd be doing, Dave. She'd be saying for the churches to remove the crosses because it offends the Muslims. And
you never know,
things
Jeff.
Like that. And also to change the name of New Zealand to New Zealand Stonian. New Zealand Stonian.
Or something like that, Well, Jeff, I want to pivot over now to something a little bit different. We all know
that... sounds
that,
like Monty Python's, Dave.
And now for something completely different. Yeah. A man doing a radio show in his underwear. No. I do have pants on today, Jeff.
Don't tell him all day.
At this moment in time, I do have pants on. That doesn't happen all often, but, you know, today I do have my... Okay. Now, you guys do know that Tommy Robinson had his lawsuit against the Cambridgeshire police, right? And you know how that turned out. He lost the suit. But one thing that was disturbing, and some of this is part of my current show, one thing that is disturbing, that was disturbing, was the way the coverage of it and everything else surrounding it. I've got two parts of this from Ezra Levant, Jeff. I want to go ahead and play these if we have time, and you know try and get these in. And guys, give this. Ezra Levant is one of the best. He's one of the best reporters there is out there for the Rebel Media. Check him out on the Rebel Media. He has a good show. If you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and start with this one. Both of these parts, by the way, are just under 10 minutes. So you ready, Jeff?
Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
All right, guys, here you go. This is part one. This was done, by the way, on the 16th of this month. So here's the first part, guys.
Back in 2016, in the case in question, in the lawsuit, I went over there to cover for Tommy. Tommy, he's a Luton fan. He had traveled up to Cambridge to watch Luton play Cambridge. Tommy went up there with a friend, and they each brought their kids. Tommy has three young kids, and they made a family day out of it. They went to some kids' festival in the city. Then they went to the stadium to watch the match, and then they went to a pub. On that fateful day 2.5 years ago, Tommy was at a pub in Cambridge with his kids, and he was in full family mode. No drinking. I know that to be the case. Tommy doesn't touch a drop of alcohol when he's with his family. And he hadn't had anything to drink all day. It was a kid's day. And I say that to distinguish him from stereotypical football hooligans who are a factor in British football. But Tommy isn't that way. Tommy watched another match on TV, a team called Manchester United. You've probably heard of them. And then the police came in, and they came up to Tommy and said, "Leave the pub now or you'll get arrested." Now, it was 6:30 p.m., the match on TV with Manchester United was going to end in half an hour anyways. Tommy was with his family. But the cops from Cambridgeshire just said, "Hey, you, out of the pub now or you'll get arrested." Tommy asked why. And they didn't give him an answer. He asked again. They responded that if he kept asking, they'd arrest him right there by serving him a form called a Section 35 dispersal notice. That's a fancy way of saying being arrested for antisocial behavior. That's a thing in the UK. Tommy engaged with the police, and he recorded it on his cell phone, and for good reason, as I'll tell you later. So Tommy was pretty irate. I mean, I think you might be too if you were interrupted at a restaurant where you were with your family and told to get out immediately or be arrested. That's what the form was. We'll give you a Form 35. If he had been drunk or disorderly or fighting with rival teams, fair play. But none of that was the case. In fact, he was apart from most of the Luton fans. He was upstairs in the pub. Most were downstairs. The landlady of the pub, who didn't know Tommy, remember this was in Cambridge, not Tommy's hometown of Luton, the landlady came over and told the cops, "This guy's fine. He's just been sitting here peacefully with his kids all day. He's been no problem." You'd think that would be the end of it. I mean, this landlady had no stake in this other than she wants an orderly restaurant, safe. And sure, she wants her paying customers. So you'd think if Tommy had been in the slightest way a problem, the landlady would say, "Oh, thank God, officer, you're here. Get him out." She'd be grateful to the cops for kicking him out. But the opposite. She was saying, "Why are you kicking out one of my paying customers? He's been here all day with his family. I wonder if they even had the right to do so." I mean, what if she instead had kicked the cops out? Pub is private property. I wonder what would have happened if the landlady would have told the cops, "Please get off my private property or I'll come for you for trespass. And please leave my peaceful paying customers alone." I wonder what would have happened in that alternate universe. But she didn't do that. And as you can see, the cop didn't even really listen to her. He just made his decision. And if Tommy didn't like it, he should take it up with the boss. Tommy grudgingly complied. And when he and his kids left the pub, the police now said, "Okay, now get out of the city. Get out of the entire city. Leave the city. Go to the train station and get out now." Now, unlike when Tommy was talking to the cops, Tommy's kids were right there now. So Tommy wasn't as vocally irate anymore. He was trying to be calm and controlled because he didn't want to upset his kids. Why were they following him? Why were they filming him? Imagine being told to leave a city. For what crime? For what crime? Well, keep asking, and I'll arrest you. That's the crime. That's what the cop upstairs said. Anyways, Tommy did indeed, as you can see, walk to the train station. And the police, well, they followed him. And they didn't just follow him. One of them took out a video camera and ostentatiously started recording him with his kids right there. How creepy is that? You could see he had left the pub. You could see he was walking to the railway station. And then his girl started to cry. And then Tommy got mad in front of his kids for the first time. So those are the facts, at least the evidence. Funny thing, that police videographer, surprise, he deleted his own videotape, even though he testified in court that he was the official evidence gatherer. That's weird. That video cop testified and said under oath that depending on the situation, he is obligated to keep evidence for at least 28 days, or even, he said, in some cases, up to 100 years. But in this case, he felt the video was of no relevance or interest, so he just deleted it. Whoopsies. Isn't that convenient? There was a lot of that at the trial. You can watch the whole 17-minute YouTube interaction of Tommy and the police as uploaded by Tommy's friend to the internet, and that's recorded on Tommy's phone. Tommy says it ended only when his cell phone battery ran out. That's why he wanted to see the police video. And he wrote to them to that effect, "Can I see the police video?" But because, for example, Tommy said that his daughter was so upset by the police following her and videotaping her that she actually started to run out into the street. And he knew that would be corroborated by the police video that captured it all. But alas, the cop thought it was irrelevant, so he deleted it. You know, I haven't practiced law in a long time, but if you delete evidence, hide something from the court, in Canada at least, there's a presumption that you were hiding something because it was embarrassing to your case. So a court takes an adverse inference from it. If you're going to play silly games like that, the court is going to assume the worst about what you refuse to show them, right? Assume it was damning, but that didn't happen here. Anyway, so I attended the trial for 3 days. I just got back to Toronto Lake last night, and the judge actually released her judgment today. And I read about it through the website of the Cambridgeshire Live, a local newspaper. They had a young reporter, Freddie Lynn, who actually was sitting next to me the whole time during the trial. We became friendly acquaintances. So he was in court still today, and he was typing things up, and I relied on him for what happened. And I learned today that the judge, in fact, ruled against Tommy. Here's Freddie's story. Not only did the judge throw out Tommy's lawsuit, but Tommy has to pay the lawyer for the police, and apparently has to pay the police themselves. I've never heard of that before. They were being paid to attend the trial. They incurred no cost personally. But Tommy told me he doesn't just have to pay for their lawyers, but the police, a total of, if I heard him right, a total of £38,000, which is over 60,000 Canadian dollars. Now, I'm mad at the police for their obvious strong-arm tactics, kicking a guy out of a restaurant for no reason at all. I'm mad at the judge for accepting it. I'm mad at the judge for what she believed and what she refused to believe from the trial. For example, she specifically said that she did not believe that Tommy's kids were with him in the pub. But he said that they were. The pub's landlady, I showed you the video, said that they were. You saw a video of them with him. But here's what the judge said. I am satisfied the children were not in the public house, but on the green. The judge said they weren't in the pub, but everyone else who was there says they were. The landlady, Tommy, you saw with your own eyes. A Luton police spotter named Constable Mason, that's one of those Luton cops that travels with the Luton team, testified that he saw Tommy with the kids. Now, he's a cop. He said it under oath, but the judge actually said she thinks that Luton cop was mistaken. What? You saw the cop hear from the landlady that Tommy was fine. You saw the cop ignore that, though. At the court, when asked why he kicked out Tommy if there were no problems, he told this laughable story about how he had bumped into someone on the street. And he only remembered this later, by the way. The cop said, the Sergeant Street of the Cambridgeshire Cops, said that he bumped into someone on the street, a drunk fan, who, he claimed, uttered something about, you better watch out for that Tommy Robinson or something. The cop actually called that intel. This alleged comment by an anonymous drunk on the street was intel. Oh, by the way, that he didn't remember till much later. But his own observations of Tommy being sober, hearing the landlady saying everything was fine, the kids were there, that apparently is mistaken. An imaginary friend told him Tommy was a risk, and that was more powerful than the landlady's. And the judge bought it. The judge said the policing I've described above, the policing that's shown in Tommy's video for 17 minutes, you can find the whole thing online. The judge said, that's fine, that's good policing. In fact, Tommy owes them money now, not the other way around. I want to tell you two more crazy things. Here's a tweet that I wrote from court. I was very careful to get it right, word for word. This is the definition of a risk supporter, a football hooligan that's at risk. The police use to arrest people on site. If you're at risk, they can arrest you on site. They call you a risk supporter. That's their word.
Okay, and that's the first half of that, guys. Jeff, if you'd like to comment briefly, then we'll get to the second half of it.
Yeah, no, it's what was said there. It's quite obvious that the judge, you could see it the way she summed up. She was sneering at Mr. Robinson basically while she was summing it up. And one thing that stood out for me is she seemed to take glee in telling him, you know, he'd lost the case, etc., etc., and, you know, costs will be added towards, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, she turned to him and she said, you're not quite as famous as you think you are, Mr. Robinson. You see, it's quite obvious to our listeners out there that she was totally biased. She'd already come to a conclusion. She knew who Tommy was. She knew he was. You say you're not quite, because she wanted it to seem that way, that she'd said it, and the lefties would be, oh, great to the judge.
Yeah, exactly, Jeff.
At the way that the establishment works. But, you know, not for too long, Dave. There's going to be some change in the very near future. You know it's coming.
Well,
we all know it's coming.
I'll tell you, man. You
but
know
Dave,
what?
I really appreciate
that's very typical.
Brilliant.
Okay, well, you know, and that's, as you say, it's very typical. She wanted to say that so she could get some nice atta girls at her next, nose in the air cocktail party that she went to. Oh, you really gave it to that Tommy Robinson, didn't you, honey? Yeah, you bitch. You know, you're not even, you really should be disbarred. But anyway, Jeff, I'm going to go ahead and play the second half. Now, people, listen to the second half carefully. If the first half disturbed you, and it should, the fact that this judge just basically ignored evidence and as Jeff said, had come to a pre-conclusion herself regarding the case before she even heard all the evidence, just listen to the second half, guys. If you're not already creeped out and disturbed, the second half will do it for you. Now, here we go. I'm going to go ahead and play this now. Again, this will be just under 10 minutes long. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show, by the way.
This is how a cop defined being a risk supporter to Tommy's lawyer. This is the European Union definition that he follows. Ready? So, Gurdon, what is the EU definition? That's Tommy's lawyer. Mason, the cop, said, any person, known or not, that has the capability or possibility of public order or antisocial behavior, whether that's spontaneous or pre-planned at any football event. Really? Any person, known or not? What does that even mean? That just means any person who has the possibility of being antisocial, even in a spontaneous manner. Isn't that literally any human being in the world? Isn't it true that any human has the possibility of being antisocial on a spontaneous basis? I mean, I guess not for a baby in a pram or something, but literally any adult could be arrested under that. Of course, that's going to be abused, just like it was abused. Why are you arresting me? I'll let you know when I arrest you. Now, am I doing something wrong right now? I'll tell you when I arrest you. Can you tell me what I'm doing? So if you keep asking me why I'm arresting you, I'm going to arrest you. Imagine having that power. I met that cop, by the way. He's just the same in person as he is in the bar there. Imagine having that power to arrest someone because they might possibly do something in the future that's antisocial. In fact, that's actually what the judge said. She accepted the imaginary friend warning the cop about Tommy as a reason to arrest him, but she dismissed the landlady's comments by saying, look at that. I mean, let me just quote from this, hold this for a second up. Judge Walden Smith continues, the landlady clearly intervened to say Mr. Lennon, that's Tommy, had been fine. That is evidence that is relevant, but it's not everything. This is the judge. She's referring, the landlady is referring to how they had been and not how he was going to be. Well, sure, the landlady said Tommy was fine all day. Okay, sure, fine. With his kids, fine. But she didn't have a crystal ball to know he would still be fine for the last hour of the game. The judge said, well, you know, he might suddenly have gone berserk. You never know. It's incredible. But there was one more thing that was incredible. I got into a little bit of trouble myself. I don't know if you heard. I was live tweeting from the court. In fact, my live tweets over the from the court over the course of 3 days, according to Twitter analytics, were cumulatively viewed 13 million times. 13 million. That is a lot of views. And you could tell that the police and the lawyers were obsessed by what I was typing. I mean, my friend Freddie from the Cambridgeshire Live was doing a good enough job, but 13 million views, that's something else not to brag. Okay, brag a little. And so this is what happened. During a break in the court, I was standing near a cop, the one who had threatened to arrest Tommy. The one said, oi, mate, I'll arrest you. I'll show you why when I arrest you. And I asked him a couple questions, including if he had any regrets. I just said, do you have any regrets? That's a total interaction. Maybe it was 10 seconds, maybe 15 seconds. And the cops just all went back into the court to move away from me. Okay, fair enough. But then those cops literally complained to the judge, claiming I was intimidating them. I swear to God. So, stalking Tommy and his kids, including making his young daughter cry, that's good policing. But these three big bad men asking them, hey guys, do you regret it? That's intimidating the police. I kid you not, the judge said that. So the judge interrupted the trial on the first day and cautioned me to stop being so intimidating. And I said, no problem. Okay, I'll stop intimidating Cambridgeshire's finest. And I actually apologized. Now, not to the cops, of course, but I apologized to the judge for causing her a headache in her own court. So no problem. I kept tweeting. And then the cops or someone must have complained again. I don't know who did, because the judge stopped the proceedings later and ordered the entire public gallery to leave the court. The judge wasn't in the, then the judge left the court. The judge wasn't in the court at that moment, actually, but she had the clerk or the usher ask every journalist, ask all the public to leave, and then ask the remaining people, including the journalists, to show their journalism license or some sort of registration card they have over there, like a permit, really a license. The court was asking everyone to prove they were licensed to commit journalism. Licensed? Well, here in Canada, we don't require a license to do journalism. We're not like Romania, where during the Cold War, you literally had to register your typewriter with the government and get a license because they didn't want anyone typing anything that could cause trouble. That's true. Look it up. So I told the court, I said, look, we don't have journalism permits in Canada, and they accepted that. But what was so gross, what was so sad was the speed, the glee, the pride with which the rest of the journalists in the room, including my friend Freddie, whipped out their licenses. They were so proud. Here's my license, mate. Proud to be asked, proud to prove they were compliant and submissive. They were so proud of their licenses. Oh, I'm licensed, bruv. Anyways, the judge came back in, raised an eyebrow about my point that we don't need licenses here in Canada. I don't know if she believed me even. And then she gave a very explicit warning to me directly that I had better stop tweeting any opinions. None at all. I couldn't question goofy things like a cop and his imaginary friend. I couldn't express an opinion at all in my tweets. Like, I was silent in the court. Obviously, I didn't say anything during the trial. She said that I couldn't say any opinions on Twitter at all. No opinions. And that her ban didn't just apply to what I said from typing in court, but if I was outside the court, like if I made a video, she said that she didn't want me to have any opinions at all on the trial until the ruling came out. I didn't want to take out any more of the court's time. So I said, look, I'll do my best to just be a stenographer. I didn't want to push this trial off the rails or anything. It wasn't my affair. But I guess that wasn't good enough because after the trial ended on the second day, Wednesday, I was asked to go back into the courtroom. And it was just me then, the judge, the two clerks, the two lawyers, the clerk and the usher, and me. And we were in the courtroom, just us. And the judge told me at great length that if I kept giving my opinions, which I guess I was doing, she'd hold me in contempt of court. It wasn't a hearing. I was facing no charges. It was just her being very mad at me. And I didn't want to fight. I told her the truth. I didn't come to Peterborough to quarrel with her. It was her trial, and I didn't want to interfere with it. To be candid, I have no idea how my tweets could possibly interfere with her trial. She's the judge. There was no jury that might sneak a peek at my tweets. It's laughable that my tweets could be intimidating to these big burly cops or something. It was so weird. So I don't even know why tweeting would impact the trial. I mean, unless they're all watching my tweets, why would they do that? Now, like I said, I have tweeted hundreds of little updates. So I asked her, well, was there anything in particular you're mad about? And she mentioned a couple, including this one, where I had made a self-deprecating joke. I said, hopefully this won't get me thrown in the dungeon. It's a little joke. It's obviously not going to derail a trial. Obviously, that's not going to intimidate a police officer. Obviously, that's not going to spoil the jury. There was no jury. It was a self-deprecating joke about me and my big mouth. But the judge obviously didn't even like the joke. I'm not even sure what was wrong with that tweet, but I deleted it. I took a picture of it before I deleted it. And I told her, I'd delete. Look, just tell me what you want me to delete. I'll just delete it. I don't care. Even if I disagree with this, just tell me. I mean, I fight for freedom every day. I fight in the court all the time. This just wasn't the right moment. It was Tommy's trial, not mine. It wasn't about me. I didn't go there to get in a quarrel in a foreign country. I thought I'd tell you that because that was probably the saddest part of the whole experience to me. First, that the UK has allowed itself to be governed by laws that allow police to simply arrest anyone for anything at any time for what future crimes they might possibly commit. Of course that's going to be abused by bully cops. That was sad to me. But even sadder was the general political media culture, that to the establishment, to lawyers, politicians, the media, the courts, everyone, having unrestricted police powers is just fine. And having journalism licenses is just fine. And threatening to hold a journalist in contempt and possibly throw him, me, in prison for expressing an opinion on Twitter or a dumb joke, that's just fine. It's all just fine. Except that it isn't. Look, I like visiting the UK. I like my friend Tommy, but I sure wouldn't want to live there. And I want to do my best to make sure that we here in Canada and in the States too don't make the same mistakes they are. By the way, one of the reasons we're fighting Rachel Notley in court so hard in Alberta is that she wants us to register our billboards with the government. Like it's a Romanian typewriter, like it's a British journalist. Yeah, no, not yet. That's an excerpt from the Ezra Levant Show. Every day, I do a video monologue, and then I interview an interesting guest, and then I end by reading my hate mail. But you've got to subscribe to it, which you can do at therebel.media/shows.
And there you go.
Yeah, Dave, I'm saying we've just got about 4 minutes. So, once again, I've got to thank you for the great audio clips there, Dave, and the slides and everything towards the show, and also to Al Jan for doing great work that she does, putting different links in, this, that, and the other. It's really awesome. But Dave, I'm going to pass it to you give a shout out to all of our foot soldiers, angels, and our global patriots out there, where they can find you during the week, buddy. I know you had a show yesterday, if I remember right.
Yeah, I did, and I shared it with you, Jeff. And by the way, that Ezra Levant clip is in that. Guys, please check out the Unplugged Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com. That runs through SHR Media, and I'm also on the Western Free Radio Network. My show times are Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and I do new shows on Saturday. And right now, I've got a show partly based on free speech and things of that nature. It leans pretty heavily on that. And already planning the next one, which is going to talk about free speech a bit more, and is going to do just a little bit of what we did here this evening. I just want to thank you, Jeff, for all the awesome work you do. Thank you, Jan. Love you. And I just want to say to the foot soldiers, angels, and global patriots of the English Defense League and patriots around the world, be safe, be blessed, and no surrender. Back to you, brother. Let's go on the ground.
Yeah, no surrender, Dave. Ever. Thank you for that. And, of course, all to our Brexiteers out. We'll be back Thursday.
Yeah, baby.
We'll be back on the eve of the mass, and it's going to be a massive demonstration in London. So we'll be here Thursday discussing the upcoming. Oh, she's just told me I've got a certain amount of seconds. So anyway, guys, I hope you've enjoyed the show this evening. A lot to talk about and a lot to digest from the show. But we'll be back again this Thursday on the eve of the 29th of March, when we officially leave the EU. So no surrender, no surrender ever, and we're going underground.
All right. Good night, Jeff.
Cheers, Dave. another show, the end of the transmission for tonight. But you know what, guys, we'll be back again this Thursday to discuss, well, what's been going on during the week, and also the build-up to, as I say, the when we leave, we're officially supposed to leave on this Friday. So I will be speaking again this Thursday with a lot more of the issues of the week from this side of the pond and from Dave's side of the pond and from all over the world. We do stay close to the to our channels. We do know what's going on in the world, guys, and we don't forget all the Christian people out there, all the Christians. You're in our prayers, my brothers and sisters. You know, stay safe, and God bless you all. For myself and from Dave and, of course, Jan, our team, no surrender. No surrender ever. And, I better do this, actually. I better just do that. Yeah, we'll see you this Thursday. Have a blessed week. God bless you all. Cheers.